Aryaghat spectacle. Golden head of the deity. Magnificent carvings in old shrines. Melodious hymns, harmonious rhythms, intermittent chants and knells. Tourists chancing to cleek the splendid heritage, lovebirds strolling to and from the woods above. People busy babbling, sobbing, wailing, and choking with grief and smoke. The splendid, the commonplace, the old, the young, the rich, the poor, the living, and the dead. Corpses brushing past bystanders, corpses washing up in Bagmati, corpses waiting for pyres, corpses singing in lousy fires. Cremators poking at smoky heaps, vagabonds warding off vagabonds, drunkards cursing unknown molesters, monkeys groaning at trespassers, dogs sniffing leftovers, flies flying from dirty ground to dead faces, from dead faces to living faces, thick smoke from half-baked cadavers, filthy holy water of the Bagmati. And there you are, a speck in the spectacle, lost in chaos, yet relieved in epiphany, that all worries end here, singing with your cadaver, your darlings and kinfolks, choked with smoke, oozing from your pyre, devotees, priests, tourists, lovebirds, vagabonds, drunkards, monkeys, dogs and flies, on the usual errands. Cremators poking at remains, the rust, the wails, the ritual attendants and nonchalant gossips. The spectacle is eternal. Along rough waters. Not until we reached rough waters and felt the first jolt of impending peril did we realize that the boatman was blind, deaf, dumb, docile. Carefully poised we were, friendly the current was, and the boat new and intact to make the sail smooth before reaching rough waters. But the boatman, blind, deaf, dumb, docile, and too dunce to devise a way out, and we, the languishing lot of self-declared wiseacres, too rigid to try hands view on our vocations, let the current and the boat decide our destinies. Despite the urge to jump off and survive, yet guided by a queer sense of coexistence, amid impending misfortune, we decide to take the boatman along with the boat and the current to decide our destiny. Devkota outlived me. 2 years younger than Devkota, my grandfather nears 100, outliving avarice and affluence, living on gruel and greens. Born in the year of Munamadan, my papa lives Devkota's lyrics, outliving egotism and absurdities, living on gruel and greens. They did not flee out of home along with distraught kinsmen, but held vague in the hills, living on gruel and greens. Their munas bestowed company in life's odds and inadequacies, singing, attuned in eternal bone, the glory of gruel and greens. I inherit the lyrics, the love, the gruel and the greens, and see that Devkota can outlive my grandpa, papa and me. Groping for a word. I groped for a word and panicked. The word emerged kindly. When it sought utterance, I panicked in lack of a language. I panicked in lack of emotion, in absence of a voice. The word waited patiently. Then I searched for a moment. I searched for motivation. I searched for an audience. Nothing I got. No one I met. Silently, the world went away, frustrated forever. I continued the search. I completed the search. Now that I have medium, movement, an audience I have, but I grow for a word and panic. I wait for a rescuer. There is a quarrel in my house. The foundation fights with the land, the cellar with the foundation, and each floor with ceilings and walls with pillars, pillars with roof and roof with the sky. What's more, the lovey loads the stairs sneer at the veranda berates the doors discount rooms, that winds at the windows which vilify the ventilators. In this home-turned hut house, my father fights with my mother, who fights with me and my sister, and we all fight with our ancestry that built our history. Where the roof rebels with the foundation, where present precludes the past for guidance, where tension touches the minuscule, my masonry, my carpentry, and little liabilities wait to be buried in revels. I wait for a rescuer. The unwritten poem. For inspiration, I try to negate myself in stars and birds outside for some lines of poetry. The dusty window glass and the metropolitan mist blur my vision of the outer, and I lose the creative urge. I wait, mystified yet insistent, until I hear a chilling thud inside and see the first stream of blood in my toddler's delicate leaves. Then I feel the first surge of poetry. Before the poem takes form, the house sneaks into the room with high arrears, low grades, lacks, losses, lambasts. Then a call from parents. Grandma has gone into oblivion. Grandpa has resumed his coughs. The farm was to be plowed and planted. I still look out for inspiration through the dust and the mist, while the house reverberates with calls and demands and drags and buries me in its insatiable orifice. I continue to feel the unwritten poems. Just or unjust. You boast, all's fair in love and war, but when your lover discards you for impotency, you call it betrayal. When you challenge an enemy for a combat and fall shamelessly, in lack of arms and skills, you call enemies blows unfair and your defeat injustice. The truth is, you have no esteem, no vigor, otherwise you would not make a show of yourself amid the revel of your own devastation, whimpering, crawling in disgust and dejection. And the pile of papers. Every season, a pile of papers sneaks into my abode. Then it invades my toddler's little world, stares at my meager amenities, sneers at my expectations, steals the peace of my home. I unpack the pile as I must, eager to dispose it at the earliest, as I turn the scribbling, myriad faces and emotions haunt me, but I pretend being untouched. Who are they but fugitives of an ailing country? What do I do but measure my own failure to instill conventions? I fly on through the file as I must, intent yet unclear, committed yet confused, while my toddler timidly asks from the door, "What do you read, Papa?" With no time to lift my eyes to read his appealing face, I only manage to blurt out, "Words, words, words, words."